hello again, and welcome back to the Flicks the Church Forgot. We are, if you recall, discussing the recent batch of DVDs from the BFI, the British Film Institute, of paranormal-themed TV dramas that were originally broadcast in the 1970s in the UK and have just recently been re-released. And the last time I chatted to you about the disc Dead of Night from 1972, but for now let me refill your brandy and let's talk of Dutch art. Schalken the Painter is from 1979, and this is the only disc that comes on Blu-ray as well as standard definition. Now, nobody normal is going to be using this disc as a demonstration for the wonders of high definition. I mean, the source elements are not exactly pristine, let me put it that way. But it's still a pretty cool bonus for a film that is really quite beautifully shot and visually composed. The film is based on a short story with the snappy title, Strange Event in the Life of Schalken the Painter, which was written by the Irish Gothic novelist Joseph Thomas Sheridan Le Fanu, or Sheridan Le Fanu to his mates. I think it's Fanu or Fainu. I can't tell you how to pronounce it. I never met the guy. But anyway, I do know of him. He wrote some famous Gothic works like the lesbian vampire novel Carmilla. But in this one, written in 1839, he weaves this fictional tale based on the real-life paintings of Dutch artist Godfried Schalken. Now, maybe you're well up on art history, but I'm afraid this is my first introduction to Schalken, and his work often features, it turns out, figures lit with candlelight, holding back curtains, surrounded in shadow, and so they already do have a natural air of mystery. But Sheridan Le Fanu obviously thought so because they inspired him to write this story, which becomes the backbone to this darkly gothic art film commissioned by the BBC. And I use that word art film deliberately. Not so much that this is a film about art, though of course it is, but that its sensibilities are more of the art house. So if you're expecting quick plotting and scary jumps and cracking dialogue, then I think you might struggle with this film. You see, Schalken the Painter is really a film that takes its time. I mean, the first act or so feels like hardly anything happens. And it's felt even more keenly because there is so very little dialogue in the film. We get many long shots of Schalken painting, of servants making cats dance in silence, or models putting their clothes back on and putting out their hand for a pile of coins in payment. I mean, yes, there's also a distinct lack of music for it. There is music in it, but the majority of the film feels fairly silent and just a few shuffling foot sound effects. In fact, the music that does come into it now again is low and ominous bass tones and that sort of stuff. And because of the quietness of the rest of the film, it really is quite unnerving when it appears. But on the whole, and particularly the start, things just feel distinctly silent, which can end up feeling like you are just watching a piece of art hanging on the wall that just happens to be moving. The slow pace is enough to put some people off, I think. But patient viewers are going to find the atmosphere cranking up when a mysterious aristocrat called Vanderhausen turns up wanting to purchase Schalken's girlfriend, Rose. Now, this scene, when he turns up, is really creepy. Because this Vanderhausen man, he's just weird. His makeup and the lighting leaves much of him in shadow, alongside his almost total lack of movement, make for this nightmarish figure. Schalken realizes that the only way for him to get his love back is to earn more money by painting so that he can, you know, buy her back. But as the story grows more and more grim, it seems like doing that might not be as easy as he expects. Now, anybody expecting all-out horror are not going to find much of it in the majority of the film, though there are some standout scary moments, basically whenever Vanderhausen's in the house, or in the housing. But it's the nightmarish vision of the ending that really hammers home the underlying message of the film. And it shares, I think, a thematic bed, so to speak, with the segment from A Dead of Night called A Woman Sobbing. Maybe there are all sorts of readings you could bring to Schalken the Painter. It's about art and commerce and death. But for me, this is again a story about women's oppression. Watching all those long, drawn-out scenes of models, mostly women, being told to sit and stand in certain positions and turn your head and show your breast and lean to the side, hold that for an hour. Watching that at first felt like an insight into artwork is produced. And there are some men who are called to be in the painting, but the majority are women. But really, artists like Schalken, in some senses, you know, watching this film, they're just copying what they see in real life. They're like fancy biological photocopiers, aren't they? They look at something for a long time and they recreate it on a canvas, albeit with tremendous talent. I'm not doubting that. But as anyway, the tale grows deeper and you understand how Rose becomes really just another possession of either Vanderhausen or Schalken. You start to think, hang on a minute, I'm getting this now. That women through the ages have just so often been treated as figurines to pose and use and discard, either in paintings or in the workplace or even in marriage. But again, that horrible and devastating image at the end is brilliantly subversive to that. It either, I'm not going to tell you what happens, but you can't work out at the end if Rose has ended up the victim or if she somehow triumphed over both men. It's hard to tell. It's just, again, I don't want to tell you too much, but Schalken certainly comes across in this film as a vain, selfish coward. By the way, the actor who plays Schalken is called Jeremy Clyde, and he does a great job of playing this at times annoying and frustrating character, but not least because he bears a very remarkable resemblance to the real-life Schalken when you look at his own self-portraits. In the end, it's a film that does, I think, what all art is supposed to do. It shows you an image or sound which suddenly becomes the springboard for conceptual thinking. I mean, that's what it's supposed to do. I don't care if it's hard to paint it or if it was easy and somebody just put a black box on the wall. I guess I'm one of those people who's quite happy to see art as just something that will make you reflect or inspire or scare or disturb. But in this case, Schalken the painter does these powerful images, and yet he is potentially objectifying and using others to do it. Now, these days, perhaps we don't do that towards women, that we don't sort of treat them terribly, that we don't see them as inferior. When I say we, I mean society. I'm talking about men and women, because I've met plenty of women who have been down on women, which is surprising. Oddly enough, I've found that in some churches, some of the most vocal people who are against women in leadership are women themselves, and that was the thing I wasn't expecting. But anyway, that's an aside. At least one hopes at the moment that we're less down on women, though salaries for women in equivalent jobs are still lower. But Schalken makes me ponder, who are the people out there who I am willing to slot into certain character molds, be they women, you know, certain colours, or certain backgrounds or religions or anything like that, you know, that we just end up making one-dimensional players who we just ignore or we slot into these little labels so that we can work out who they are and who they fit, how they fit into our story. I think in some ways Schalken the painter was a pretty profound lesson in, you know, not just using other people as bit players, but like that people are human beings. And in this case, also, it's a deliciously creepy film as well. So I did like that. Anyway, the rest of the disc is stuffed with some substantial extras. There's a couple of short films, each running about 30 minutes. And there's a 30-minute interview with the director, who offers some really interesting insight into the film. Apparently, Vincent Price was first considered as the narrator, but they chose against that because they thought he was a bit too schlocky for this sort of material. And as much as I love Vincent Price, they were right. I think this is quite a serious, arty type film. And if Vincent Price suddenly popped up, good evening. I don't know. It just wouldn't quite sound right. They also sent the script to Peter Cushing, who apparently just read this script and thought the story was disgusting and refused to do it. So anyway, there you have it. Schalken the Painter. It's an acquired taste. And I think some people on my recommendation of seeing it might think, what a waste of time. But I thought it was, I think it's one worth seeking out, and it's something, I guess, for the more thoughtful, patient horror fan. The next disc I want to tell you about this evening is Classic Ghost Stories from 1986. When was the last time somebody sat down with you and told you a story? I don't mean a witty anecdote. Oh, you'll never believe what happened to me at the abattoir today. Now, ooh, such a hoot. No, I mean, are you sitting comfortably? Good. Then I'll begin. Once upon a time, unless you count audiobooks, this art of telling stories to one another doesn't happen a great deal, particularly once we grow up. I mean, at the moment, I read stories to my children when they go to bed at night, but I guess for many parents, this practice has a natural shelf life. At some point, the kids will not be into that, I suppose. Who wants to listen to some guy reading from a book when they could be playing Club Penguin on their iPad or watching the latest season of Homeland or whatever they're into? But this next disc from the BFI, called Classic Ghost Stories from 1986, is a great reminder of the power of simple storytelling. Here, Robert Powell, also known as Jesus from Zeffirelli's Jesus of Nazareth, sits in his cozy Victorian study in what looks like his dressing gown, but I think it was a sort of thing that people wore back in those days, but it sort of looks like a dressing gown. And he sits there just sharing classic tales of M.R. James. And that's it for the majority of the running time. Powell talking directly to camera as he shifts on his creaking chair. He moves to look out of the window. He tilts his head. At one point, he even stands up and walks towards the fireplace. That's probably the zenith of the action that Powell displays here, but of course it's what's coming out of his mouth that has you clutching your pillow and unable to turn away. It's a collection of five stories by M.R. James, who was an English scholar and author, who was most famous for his ghost stories. The stories, in some senses you could say they did what Stephen King did in the 70s and 80s by pulling horror from gothic castles into everyday contemporary environments. And M.R. James did that to some extent, albeit his contemporary environment was the 1900s, the early 1900s. Now the five stories that are on display here are The Mezzotint, The Ash Tree, The Wailing Well, A Whistle and I'll Come to You, My Lad, and The Rose Garden. Each story, I think, is about 15 minutes long, and all of them are absorbing and creepy. But I want to tell you about a couple of standouts for me. The first two just really got my attention. For example, in The Mezzotint, that centers around a mysterious piece of artwork. Now, a mezzotint, if you're interested and you want something trivial to share at a dinner party this Christmas, a mezzotint is a printing method that originated in Germany in the 17th century. And a man called Williams, in the story, is acquiring new artworks for the university library when he comes across this mezzotint of a country house. It seems innocuous enough, if a little crude, but he feels drawn to it. And yet later, when he inspects it again, he notices something that he wasn't sure if it was there before or not. There's a shadow of a figure in the foreground. Confused, he leaves the picture again. He doesn't really think anything of it, only to look later and he sees something that sends a shiver down his spine. Listen, I'm not going to start telling you what all of those things are, but let me just say there is something about this story and the way it develops that really gives me the creeps. And Robert Powell's telling of it is masterful. But not only does the story draw you in, but in this TV form, the BBC present pictures of the changing mezzotint itself. So when you read this, like, it's just in a book, you use your own imagination, and that often works the best. But in some ways, we might think that what we can't see is always better, but the combination of music, story, and image combined in this TV program in such a way that they really gave the mezzotint itself a sense of menace and threat, because the picture gradually changes and we're drawn to this mysterious and dark tale. It's not a particularly long story, but it's a lovely slice of classic ghost story. I liked it. The next episode is called The Ash Tree, and like the first segment, it's only enhanced from the page by this format. It's about a long-dead witch hanged for her heresies and an ash tree that still seems to have the powers of death. I've never actually heard this story before, but I must say I really was chilled as it was read to me by Robert Powell. Not least by this very weird and spooky image that suddenly appears, which with what happens to a victim as they are lying sleeping in bed. I'm not going to tell you anything, but it's so surreal and horrible. And I was like, what on earth am I looking at? I couldn't work it out. And when I sort of realized what it was, it really creeped me out. Now, the other stories are great, too. Perhaps most famous is A Whistle and I'll Come to You, My Lad, which has also been made into a more substantial length drama by the BBC, and that's also released by the BFI. But in short, I think this is a treat of a DVD if you want to rediscover what it's like to sit in a room with someone else and hear them tell you a story, and a spooky one at that. And it's a perfect thing for Christmas. Also featured on the disc are three episodes of a series called Spine Chillers from 1980, which were produced by the BBC's Jack and Nori team. Any British person of my age will know what Jack and Nori was. It was a storytelling program for kids. And these ones have a more gothic feel, retelling more ghost stories, including an alternative reading of the mezzotint. You know, if I didn't have to watch these DVDs for my column and for this podcast, I probably would have saved these stories so I could have maybe one each night before bed coming up to Christmas, but I had a deadline, so I had to watch them all in one go. But if you do check them out, it might be quite fun to space them out and enjoy what it's like to have stories told. Now, there's one other disc, a two-disc set, in fact, to look at. That's the anthology series from the 70s called Supernatural. But I think it's a natural time for a little breather now. And so tune in next time when I'll be exploring more of the BFI, the gothic DVDs that have been released. So until then, don't forget the flicks that church forgot.